Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
No strike at UPS. The Teamsters reach a deal. Higher wages, more jobs, equal pay, and more. President Sean O'Brien says, we change the game. Today on the show, the latest from the Heat and Frost Insulators and an employment expert on the surge in child labor in America. Welcome to the Wednesday, July 26th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on at least five platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. Mr. Pete Almini will be our first guest on the show. Longtime contributor to America's Workforce comes to us on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Trust, the national website Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. You go there and you find out everything you need about mechanical insulation. The one thing that goes into a building and starts paying for itself as soon as it's done. It's amazing. It really is amazing. And we'll talk more about that. The good news is this. The Federal Mechanical Insulation Act, which is noted as House Resolution 4663, was finally introduced in Congress. Happened on Friday, July 14th, by Congressman Randy Weber, Republican out of Texas, and Linda Sanchez, Democrat out of California. So we got bipartisan support. We'll talk about that. Right now, there are over 350,000 federal buildings in the country, and just about every one of them needs mechanical insulation. And by doing so, it's going to save money, our money, because that's our tax money. So we'll talk about the legislation, and we're also going to focus on the recognition of mechanical insulation to be an energy-saving commodity. And also, coming up, September is right around the corner, and September is Suicide Prevention Month. There's a number of awareness campaigns. Pete's very, very passionate on this issue. And unfortunately, suicide is more prevalent in the trades. A lot of that has to do with work injuries, prescription drugs that result to take care of those injuries. And before you know it, you see a lot of tradesmen and women committing suicide. We'll talk about that as well as a prep for September. So Pete will be our first guest. Second guest on the show is Rob Wilson. Rob is an employment expert, and he is going to talk about the big jump in child labor, and I mean a big jump, and child labor violations. A number of states, I think like 14 states right now, have lowered the age for children to work, and many of the occupations are quite dangerous, and I'm going to talk about what's happened here. A couple of children have already died. But there has been a 300% increase in child labor violations in the last 7 years. This is all coming from data collected from the Department of Labor. Labor laws for children are in flux right now, says Rob. And I think the violations exemplify this. Laws vary so widely by state, and employers might be more willing to push the envelope when it comes to certain regulations. It's hard to find workers. And if a minor is capable and eager to work, it might seem like a win-win. Then he points to the state of Iowa, where Governor Kim Reynolds signed a new measure that allows minors to work later hours and even serve alcohol under certain conditions. We talked about this on the show with the Iowa AFL-CIO. Now, here's where Rob comes. He points to the fact that the brains of teenagers are not fully developed, which might mean they take risks they should not in the workplace. Really, really good point. And let me tell you what's going on in the country here. For the third time in 6 weeks, a 16-year-old boy has died after sustaining on-the-job injuries at an industrial site. Latest teen death was Friday night, last Friday, at the Mar Jack Poultry Plant in Hattiesburg, Mississippi. It's the third worker death at the plant since December of 2020. Devon Thomas Perez died after being trapped in equipment on a conveyor belt, according to police. He was entering the ninth grade. And one of his greatest accomplishments was buying his own car. That was in his obituary. Then there's 16-year-old Michael Schulz. He died at the end of June after sustaining injuries at the Florence Hardwoods Logging Company. Kids working at a logging company. This was in Florence, Wisconsin. He was trying to unjam a wood stacking machine when he became pinned under the machinery. Oh, my gosh. And then there's Will Hampton, 16. He died on June 8th in Summit, Missouri, after becoming injured while working at the Lee's Summit Resource Recovery Park landfill. Will was a high school sophomore, became pinned between a tractor-trailer rig and its trailer, resulting in his death. By the way, OSHA is investigating all three deaths. Amazing. So we'll talk about that. We're going to do more on this, too, because this issue is getting out of control. There's a group in Florida that's been pushing to relax child labor laws around the country. And with 14 states, they're making a profound effect on that. There's no doubt about that. All right, now a brief look into the world of labor. The segment brought to you by the good folks at Boyd Watterson Asset Management. $17 billion in assets under advisement, serving the needs of Taft-Hartley funds, corporations, public funds, endowments, foundations, as well as religious organizations. You can find more at BoydWatterson.com. Big news out of the Teamsters yesterday. The Teamsters reached the most historic tentative agreement for workers in the history of the United Parcel Service, protecting and rewarding more than 340,000 UPS Teamsters in the country. The contract raises wages for all workers, creates more full-time jobs, and includes dozens of workplace protections and improvements. Got a comment here from General President Sean O'Brien, who's been driving this for months now. He said, rank-and-file UPS Teamsters sacrificed everything to get this country through a pandemic and enabled UPS to reap record-setting profits. Teamster labor moves America. The union went into this fight committed to winning for our members. We demanded the best contract in the history of UPS, and we got it. UPS has put $30 billion in new money on the table. As a result, a direct result of these talks, we've changed the game, battling it out day and night to make sure our members want an agreement that pays strong wages, rewards their labor, and does not require a single concession. This contract sets a new standard in the labor movement and raises the bar for all workers. UPS came dangerously close to putting itself on strike, but we kept firm in our demands. In my more than 40 years in Louisville, representing members at Worldport, the largest UPS hub in the country, I have never seen a national contract that levels the playing field for workers so dramatically as this one. The agreement puts more money in our members' pockets, establishes a full range of new protections for them on the job. Now, that comment came from Fred Zuckerman, who serves as General Secretary Treasurer. Fred went on to say, we stayed focused on our members and fought like hell to get everything that full-time and part-time UPS Teamsters deserve. Brandy Harris is a part-time UPS Teamster with Local 174 in Seattle. Brandy is also part of the Teamsters National Negotiating Committee. Brandy said rank-and-file members served on the committee for the first time, so we got to show up every day to support our fellow Teamsters and share their stories. Well, our hard work has paid off. From those members and leaders negotiating for more at the table to my sisters and brothers building a credible strike threat around the country. Our union was organized and we were relentless. We hit every goal that UPS Teamster members wanted and asked for with this agreement. It's a yes vote for the most historic contract we have ever had. That's pretty fascinating that they had rank-and-file members part of the negotiating team. That just gives you a pretty good indication of where this is going to go. It is a tentative agreement. It goes for 5 years, starting this year, going to 2028. Let me run down some of the things here. This is really amazing. Historic wage increases. Existing full and part-time UPS Teamsters will get $2.75 more per hour this year and $7.50 more per hour over the length of the contract. Existing part-timers will be raised up to no less than $21 per hour immediately. Part-time seniority workers earning more under a market rate adjustment would still receive all new general wage increases. General wage increases for part-time workers will be double the amount obtained in the previous contract. Wage increases for full-timers will keep UPS Teamsters the highest paid delivery drivers in the country, improving their average top rate. You ready for this? $49 an hour. Current UPS Teamsters working part-time would receive longevity wage increases up to $1.50 per hour, and this is on top of new hourly raises. New part-time hires at UPS will start at $21 per hour and advance to $23 per hour. For the first time ever, everyone of the UPS Teamsters will receive Martin Luther King Day as a full holiday. No more forced overtime on Teamster driver days off. Drivers would keep one of two work week schedules and could not be forced into overtime on scheduled off days. Also, the creation of 7,500 new full-time Teamster jobs at UPS and the fulfillment of 22,500 open positions, establishing more opportunities through the life of the agreement for part-timers to transition into full-time work. This is amazing. Well, on Monday, July 31st, representatives of the 176 UPS Teamster locals, now this is in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, they will meet to review and recommend the tentative agreement. All UPS rank-and-file members will receive a list of improvements in the contract. Locals will conduct member meetings, and Teamsters will have several weeks to vote on the offer, and they'll do this electronically. Now, the member voting begins next week, August 3rd, and will wrap up on August 22nd. By the way, the UPS Teamster National Master Agreement is the single largest private sector collective bargaining agreement in all of North America. Isn't that amazing? So hats off to the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, a union that goes back to 1903, representing 1.2 million hardworking people in the U.S., Canada, and Puerto Rico, and 340,000 at UPS alone. You can find more at teamster.org. All right, quick break. When we come back, Pete Almeida on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
We're the nurses, firefighters, and claims representatives that help keep our government services running. We respond to natural disasters. We care for our nation's veterans. And we investigate discrimination in the workplace. We are federal and D.C. government workers. And we are proud to serve the American people. Working in more than 70 agencies across the government, we know we can fulfill our mission because our union has our back. Learn more at AFGE.com. AFL-CIO.org. Paid for by the American Federation of Government Employees, AFL-CIO. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Federation of Professional and Technical Engineers. You can find more at ifpte.org.
America's Workforce is sponsored in part by Boyd Watterson Asset Management, LLC. Find out more about our investment solutions tailored to meet the needs of Taft-Hartley funds at boydwatterson.com.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Iron Workers. You can find more at ironworkers.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast, AWF Union Podcast. We broadcast out of Cleveland. We podcast to the entire world. And right now, we're in the top 5% of all podcasts in the world. So we're very happy about that. By the way, this next segment is brought to you in part by the North Coast Labor Federation. Let's go to the state of New Jersey right now. Welcome one of our longtime supporters, and that would be the Heat and Frost Insulators. Pete Almini serves as the executive director of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT. That's a labor management trust. Mechanical Insulators, L.com, is a website, and Pete is a happy camper because finally, the Federal Mechanical Insulation Act has been introduced. Mr. Pete Almini, how we doing today, my union brother?
Hey, how you doing today?
The jersey comes out every time. Well, you're doing real well today because you and I have talked about this for months now, and it's important that we got bipartisan support, but it finally happened on Friday, July 14th. Let's talk about it. This had to be a celebration of sorts, right?
Yes, it was. It was a celebration. It was short-lived. I equate it to we scored a touchdown in the first quarter. And, you know, the game plan worked, and the game plan is being executed. But the journey begins, and we got the rest of the ball game to be able to close the deal. And what makes this huge for us, and it's kind of I equate it to the infamous words of Neil Armstrong, one small step for man, one giant step for mankind. I mean, as far as legislation goes, it's a very small bill. It's only two pages. Hopefully that'll work in our advantage of getting it passed. But it's huge in the mechanical insulation world because finally the federal government is going to, hopefully with the passage of the bill, recognize mechanical insulation as a serious energy commodity. And in their federal buildings, and there's close to 400,000 buildings around this country of ours that would undergo some sort of mechanical insulation inspection, evaluation, audit, and it will be done every 4 years, as the current legislation already requires that federal buildings go under some sort of energy audit. But the energy audit that they've been doing since 2007 does not include mechanical insulation. So the precipice of this bill is to be able to have that language inserted in the existing laws. And I'm hoping it's going to be a no-brainer for our Congress to be able to pass this, because it's a win-win-win for everybody, including our taxpayers. It's going to save taxpayers a tremendous amount of money operating these federal buildings.
All right, Pete, I have a question for you. So they do these audits. They find out that the buildings, and you mentioned there's a lot of buildings, hundreds of thousands of buildings there that are under the direction of the federal government and owned by the federal government. Now, if the audit shows they're losing energy up until now, They don't do anything about it? I mean, this legislation will allow them to install mechanical insulation. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, it will. It will identify where the energy is being lost, and the mechanical insulation energy audit identifies it pretty well on where potentially a building's losing money. Now, it may very well be that the mechanical insulation of a building is perfectly fine and nothing has to be done to it. And that has to be recognized as well. But studies have shown that 10 to 30% of mechanical insulation is missing in most buildings throughout the country. And that has to be addressed. And it's a part of the realization is that people don't think that, you know, the mechanical insulation is that big a deal. Well, when they start seeing the numbers from the energy audit and they see how much money is being wasted and how much money can be saved, it's really a no-brainer. The typical return on investment is anywhere between 6 months to 2 years, and that includes the cost of the contractor to install it. And that's mm-hmm. the shortest amount of return of any energy-efficient commodity that's on the market right now. It's low-hanging fruit. We just got to get that information out to the right people so they can take advantage of it.
So, Pete, you mentioned this is only 2 pages long, which is amazing. Usually bills that come out of Washington are thousands of pages, but this one is very short. Does it have a component for funding this? I mean, if that, you mentioned that 10 to 30% are losing that mechanical insulation. So, okay, they get the energy audit and they need the mechanical insulation. They have to hire the contractor to do this. I mean, are we talking about funding this then in this legislation?
Within this legislation, no. There's no mention of any type of funding. But it would go under the maintenance of that federal building, which ultimately is the taxpayers' money.
Right.
Now, if you're able to invest, say, a typical four-story building, and you have to do the mechanical insulation upgrades, and I'm just spitballing here some numbers, suppose it's going to cost $400,000 to ensure that the mechanical insulation is properly installed. Well, the return on investment is that because of the size of that insulation project, you're going to make that money up, say, within a year. So that's $400,000 that for example, the next 9 years, they're going to be saving that money. And it's taxpayers'
right.
money.
Right.
This is a no-brainer. This should have been being done 20 years ago. But we're addressing it now, though, which makes me very excited.
Well, I know. I mean, sometimes, well, the wheels turn slowly. Let's be honest. This had to be an education process for so many members of Congress. And was this like direct communication with these members? I see the two sponsors here, Randy Weber out of Texas and Linda Sanchez, Democrat out of California. Did you work primarily with these two? Were there more to say, wait a minute, here's how things work when in the mechanical insulation industry? Can you walk me through that process, Pete?
To me, it was fascinating because, as you know, we introduced a similar bill last year with Democrat Linda Sanchez, and we had a tremendous amount of support from the Democratic side. And the plan was to reintroduce it right away in January. But we really sat back and looked at this and saying, you know what, if we have any chance of this thing passing in the House, we need bipartisan support. And ever since January, and it's the end of July, you know, we've been working on the Republicans' side of it, knowing that we need bipartisan support. And we've been speaking to many Republicans about it, and being from the labor side of the world, you know, they looked at me a little cross-eyed, and they felt this is just a labor issue. Mm-hmm. And I love the dialogue with them because I said, no, this is not about labor. It's not favoring the union. It's not favoring Democrats. This is smart, good business, and it's an investment of our taxpayers' money. And I was able to talk to many Republicans. I actually spoke to Congressman Weber himself. We had a couple meetings that I had with him, and he is a former HVAC contractor. So obviously we had an instant connection, and he understood it. And he was unaware of the fact that the federal legislation in existence required the energy audits. He knew about that. But it was an education process for him to find out that mechanical insulation was not part of the audit. He goes, how can this be? I said, well, sir, with all due respect, that's why I'm talking to you. I need your help. And I sat down with his staff, and we went through it, and every question that they had for me, I spun it back. This is good business. I don't care whether it's Republican, Democrat, Independent. I don't care. Someone tell me how this doesn't make sense.
Right.
And we lay it all out. And he agreed with it. And he was almost apologetic to me that this should have been taken care of decades ago.
Yeah.
And he thanked me for bringing it to his attention. And he's been more than happy and more supportive to be able to sponsor this. And he's on the Energy and Commerce Committee. We have reached out to every single member on the Energy and Commerce Committee. Right now, this is where the bill sits. Hopefully, there's going to be a subcommittee and a hearing. And I've been told I'm going to be testifying in front of the subcommittee on this issue. But we're gathering support. He has support from his Republicans on that committee. We got support from the Democrats on this committee. And the lobbying team that works with me, State Federal Strategies, they have done their homework, and they really built up a campaign that so far seems to be going in the direction that we want it. It isn't just a case that we had this introduced and we have a bill and we do a photo op and we talk about it. There's been a lot of work that has been done behind the scenes to be able to get this thing passed. And I'm very proud of that fact.
Pete, any idea when we could get this through the House? Could it happen this year? What's your gut telling you on this one?
That is the plan. That is the plan right now. And right now we're going to follow Congressman Weber's lead. And when he feels it's comfortable to be able to take a vote in the committee, you know, and then in the House, then we will. Mm-hmm. And while we're still working on that, we're working on the Senate companion bill as we speak. We have a couple of meetings set up. We have a couple of hopeful champions that we want to be able to introduce this on the Senate side. I don't want to say their names right now, but I want to give them the respect to be able to fully vet out the process. But it's positive that hopefully by the end of the year we'll have both the Senate bill and this existing House bill in there at the same time. Whether they get voted on the same time or not, I'm going to leave that up for my political experts to be able to figure out what is best. But hopefully we're going to get this thing moving, and I'm hoping that we can at least have a vote by the end of the year. But we're not going to push for a vote until we're sure we have the votes.
Well, considering the polarization of Congress, it's tough to move anything. So it's quite an accomplishment just to get this introduced and to make some progress and to have bipartisan support. And like you said, it's a no-brainer. We're saving taxpayers' money. Come on. So the education process, the learning process will continue here throughout this whole process. Again, the legislation is titled 4663, House Resolution 4663, introduced Friday, July 14th, by Texas Congressman Randy Weber, a Republican, Linda Sanchez, Democrat, out of California. Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com, is the national website. Pete Almini, our guest, will talk more with him. We're going to talk about the suicide awareness campaign that's going to hit pretty hard here in the next month or so. Later in the show, we're going to talk about child labor and child labor violations. Three teens killed in industrial accidents in this country. We'll talk about that and more right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America. You can find more at CWA-Union.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, where you can find more at teamster.org.
Union members need to be heard. Reliable and convenient union voting has never been more important than it is now. Make voting easy for your membership by working with survey and ballot systems. SBS offers encrypted and monitored solutions that ensure your elections are accurate and accessible for every member through mail-in, online, and in-person voting. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com and take the next step in getting secure and auditable elections.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Cooperative Trust. Find out more at insulators.org/LMCT.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on at least five platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Pandora. And when you get an opportunity, just sign up. Receive our shows on a regular basis and give us a rating. We always appreciate those five-star ratings, so please keep them coming. Let's go back to our live line, rejoin Pete Almini on behalf of the Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Trust. Website, mechanicalinsulatorslmct.com. Pete, over the years, has been very passionate about one issue, and that's suicide prevention, because the numbers in the trades are astronomical. I think it's like four times that the national average. A lot of that has to do with injuries on the job, prescription drugs, painkillers. Next thing you know, that life has come to an end. The Heat and Frost Insulators Labor Management Trust has been very, very vigilant on this issue. Pete, maybe you could fill me in. You got a campaign coming up. I know you spent a lot of time. You're very passionate on this issue. Can you tell me where we stand on all of this?
Thank you, Flash. And we are very passionate about this. And it's been a big white elephant in the room nobody wanted to talk about for decades. And finally, the last two or three years, this subject matter has received a lot of attention. And the insulators have been very active with this and promoting the awareness of preventing suicide, as well as the larger umbrella issue of mental well-being. Recently, what the insulators have done, the LMCT has done, it's a cute concept that just catches fire. We printed up poker chips, and some of the other trades have done this as well, and it's just caught my attention. You pass out poker chips on a job site, or even in a boardroom, or in the break room. You know, it just catches the attention because they're colorful, they're flashy, they got a little weight to them. People put them in their pocket, and I think it's a great concept to be able to use the poker chip to deliver the new. And I'm going to say new, it's a year old already. It's not exactly new, but getting the word out about the three-digit emergency hotline on a phone. Everyone is aware of what 911 is. We're taught that all the way back to grade school, and you need emergency help, you dial 911. Well, now there's 988, and that's for a suicide prevention. And there's hotlines, there's text numbers, and all of this stuff. But you know what? Everybody's got a phone, and you don't need to know the phone number for the fire department if you need a fire. You just contact 911, or even on your cell phone, it goes to the local fire department. Same thing with 988. Now people, when they're in a crisis situation, they need immediate help. All they got to do is push 988. And we printed up poker chips that have that message. And the concept is that once you read the chip and you understand 988, take that chip and pass it on to somebody else. And I was at the Tennessee Valley Authority annual conference 2 weeks ago in Tennessee. I handed out about 1,000 of these chips to all the different crafts and contractors, and I could have handed out 2,000. People were asking for them, and hopefully that those chips will circulate throughout our society, and as well as other crafts doing the same thing, and we can get the word out about the importance of 988. 5 years from now, everyone should know it. That's fine, but it's important that we get that awareness out. And in addition, our international has just rolled out a international member assistance program for our members. And this is something that is state-of-the-art, I believe. I don't think there's anyone else that is doing this on this scale. But we have combined two companies called Perspective and U-Turn to be able to assist our members if they have any mental health issues. And I hate to label it like that because it sounds terrible, but this goes beyond suicide. It's depression. It's addiction to drugs and opioid abuse. And I know, Flesh, you had many podcasts already about the abuse of opioids. And, oh, my God, this is a national issue that has to get addressed and even more awareness on. But nevertheless, construction workers are going to get depressed and also dependent upon chemicals relatively easy just because of the nature of our work. Right. But our Insulators International is addressing this head on, and we are offering assistance to our members in any way that they need to be able to address their mental issues. And the key part about any of this assistance and help is the confidentiality, is that we want to be able to reach out to our members and offer them help without the fear of being judged either by the local union or being judged by the contractor or even being judged by their peers. And we take it a step further, and we reach out to not just to the member, but also to the families of the member. Sometimes the one that's going to recognize an issue more than anybody else may be the children of a member or even the wife of the member. And what has been discovered for some time now by professionals is that, you know, we all wear a mask, and whether we're at work or we're at home, you know, you don't really, it's hard to actually see what's going on behind that face that we all put on. And a quick example would be, who would think one of the funniest guys in the world, Robin Williams, suffered with depression his entire life? It's such a contrast to what we may think of that genius comedian. But he's no different than a lot of people that are suffering with some of these issues. You know, we become very good at putting on a mask and hiding our inner feelings and the things that are going on in our personal life. But we rolled out this program to our membership, and unfortunately, fortunately, depending upon how you want to look at it, it's already being used. And it's amazing. We already have some success stories on how some people have used it, and it's helped them and helped them and their family. And I'm just as much excited as I am proud that the leadership of My International has addressed this issue, and we're trying to make a difference. And it's something that's really another benefit of when people talk about a union or what a union does for its people. This is a prime example. Mm-hmm. We take care of our members, and we want them to have a long, prosperous career.
As it should be. Pete, you piqued my interest here. You mentioned how successful this campaign has been for the Heat and Frost Insulators. If you don't mind, if you could reach out to one or two of those individuals who were helped by the program, I would put them on the air. And I understand if they don't want to come, I get that. I get that, because there's a certain privacy here that we want to keep intact. But why don't you check into that? That would be a good service to our listeners to show that, you know what, there are sources out there that can help people and make a difference and keep them alive. Can we talk about that?
Absolutely. I will give it a shot. Absolutely. Okay. I'm sure there are a lot of people that would like to be able to share, because the ones that I've talked to are very grateful, and it opened up a whole new world. And many of them asked me, Pete, if anything I can do to help out, let me know. So I'll reach out to them and see what we can do.
We'll do it right here on America's Workforce. Pete Almini, Executive Director of the Heat and Frost Insulators, LMCT Mechanical Insulators, LMCT.com. And also, I should plug the insulators here, insulators.org, the national website. You take care, and we'll talk next month. Okay, brother?
Thank you, Flesh. You take care as well.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Child labor and child labor violations. We'll talk about it next right here on the show.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org. America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Steelworkers. You can find more at usw.org.
From the Golden Gate Bridge to the St. Louis Gateway Arch, the Sears Tower, and just about every building, bridge, and structure in between, our cities and towns wouldn't be the same without ironworkers. With over 3,000 contractors employing more than 130,000 highly trained ironworkers and 20,000 apprentices, the Ironworkers Union stands ready and able to shape the future of our skylines. Learn more at ironworkers.org. Ironworkers, the sky's the limit.
America's Workforce is brought to you in part by the United Auto Workers. Find more at uaw.org.
This segment of America's Workforce is brought to you by Survey and Ballot Systems. SBS has been providing unions with secure and flexible election options for over 30 years. Visit surveyandballotsystems.com to learn more.
America's Workforce is presented by the Laborers International Union of North America. Feel the power right now at liuna.org.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And remember, you can check us out on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. That would be AWF Union Podcast. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the Ohio Federation of Teachers, oh.aft.org. How appropriate, too, because, you know, you think of kids, you should be in school, not working in a dangerous industry. Let's go to line number two right now. And joining us from Chicago is Rob Wilson. Rob is an employment trends expert. For 27 years, he's worked in human resources, and he's represented a number of companies, and he's seen what everybody else is seeing right now. Child labor laws are changing and child labor violations are way up, like 300% up in the last 7 years. Rob Wilson, welcome to America's Workforce here. I know we talked to you in years past, but you've been following this trend. This is a scary trend in America. I'd like to get your point of view. Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. When you look at child labor violations, it's up 300% over the last 5 years. It's an incredible number. And what you're seeing, the violations come from, youth that are, in some cases, 12 years old up to 18 that are doing dangerous jobs that they shouldn't be doing. They're either not trained for it, but a number of them have been killed and definitely injured.
Now, this has been going on for quite some time, and it happens all around the world. In the United States, I mean, if you take a look at the history of the United States, it was very prevalent back in the 1800s, kids working on farms. And then
when Roosevelt, FDR, became president, things changed in the 1930s. And they're saying, you know what? Kids belong in school. They shouldn't be working in dangerous occupations. But we have seen a number of states now. What is it, like 14 states that have relaxed the rules on when a kid can work? Can you speak to that?
Yes. Yeah, so there's actually 10 states that as the federal government's looking to make it harder and restrict it more, there's been 10 states that have rolled back child labor protections. And some of them are letting, there's a half a dozen states that are extending work hours, where in the past, from a federal standpoint, youths, which was anyone under 18, could, and minimum age is 14, could work during the course of the school year, maximum 3 hours on a school day. They're rolling these back in states like Wisconsin, South Dakota, Ohio, New Jersey. So they're letting kids work longer hours during the school year. They're also doing things like they're eliminating training requirements, age certifications. Iowa just lifted restrictions on hazardous work. So the work that kids can do in Iowa now is a lot different. They can do a lot more dangerous work that doesn't require them being trained.
Yeah, also in Iowa, they could serve alcohol under certain conditions. I mean, kids, I believe, like 16 years of age. You mentioned Wisconsin. I read a story at the top of the show about a 16-year-old, Michael Schulz, who died after sustaining injuries at the Florence Hardwoods Logging Company. He was trying to unjam a wood stacking machine, and he was pinned under the machinery on a conveyor belt. Scary stuff. You pointed out in your press release that the problem with this is kids, their brains aren't fully developed, and they probably think they can do just about anything. Can you take that point any further here? I mean, I guess I don't know when the brain stops developing. Some probably quicker than others.
I think it points to one, the youth that are, they're young, they're still in school, they're doing jobs that they weren't trained for. So, and that's the key when you look at loss control and workers' comp rules. They're doing things that, they're on jobs. Sometimes it's their first job they've ever had. They have no experience at that. And, you're putting them in meatpacking facilities or working in metal shops. It's just prone. You're going to have injuries with that because there's they're too young to be doing those high hazard jobs. A company down in the South, they had 100 kids working in a meatpacking facility. So I don't know if you've ever been to a meatpacking facility, but it's not the best and safest facility for someone to work, let alone kids with no training. Mm-hmm. But, it goes back to a couple issues. One, the states are trying to say it's going to ease the labor shortage by letting more kids in the workforce. But at the end of the day, when some of these employers look at what a youth or a kid is being paid versus an adult, just on the minimum wage on the federal side, they make federal minimum wage is $7.25. A youth minimum wage is $4.25. So they could hire that $4.25 applies to anybody under 20 years old. So they could hire someone that's 16 and pay them $3 less an hour.
Is that a federal wage, the $4.25?
Yeah, that's a federal youth minimum wage.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Well, $7.25 is atrocious, but $4.25, my God.
Right. And then if you follow that all the way through, so your wages are lower, so you're going to pay a lower workers' comp premium. And if a youth is injured in a workplace injury, when you look at the workers' comp, the way workers' comp is paid, the TTD, which is your temporary total disability, is based on 66% of your wages. So if you're paying someone less, your claim is going to be worth less.
Now, Rob, let me ask you this. You work with a lot of companies. How many companies do you work with? You do human resources for how many?
Over 850.
850. So obviously there's some dialogue going on between you and these companies. What are you telling these companies right now when they're thinking about, do any of them talk to you about hiring kids as young as, 13, 14 years old?
We don't see, we get the questions a lot on the volunteer side, where in a lot of it, where the kid should be working is something non-hazardous. So if it's in the office, if it's doing things that, they should not be working doing the jobs that we're talking about. So we do field calls from clients. We see a lot, some of the kids that are out working at, you're seeing more and more on the tech side, which, I'm all for a desk job and technology for the youth, but we definitely advise them that you need to be careful, and you need to keep, especially our loss control team is out advising that you need to keep people safe, and training is very important.
We did a show with the Iowa AFL-CIO recently about what they did in their state, and I know they worked hard to neutralize this the best they can, but they still move forward, and kids are working, and I mentioned earlier about serving alcohol and all that. Here's my question to you. Are you a parent, Rob? Do you have kids?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Okay. How come the parents aren't more vocal about this? I mean, if your kid, today, your kid said, hey, Dad, I got this opportunity to work at a meat packing plant after school. What would you say to that kid?
Sure. You would say no. I would say no. But one of the things that a fact that's really buried in all the data is of a lot of these kids out there, there's just last year in 22, there's 130,000 unaccompanied migrant children that crossed the U.S. border. So these are kids that came across the southern border that aren't with their parents, that are who knows where they're staying, and they're being taken advantage of. So they have no money. They're either in foster homes or they're living somewhere. So they're out working. So they're taking any job they can get. So that's when that's a key issue that I think that is no one's talking about is where are these kids? Like you said, where are your parents? Well, here's 130,000 of them that are here without their parents.
Yeah. And if you look at the history of America, I've been really on this issue. We're going to do more on this. There was a time in America, my parents too, my dad immigrated from Europe in 1920. And which when you think about it, in the scheme of things, it wasn't that long ago, but there was a time where the parents said to their kids, you got to go out there and work because we're not bringing enough money in. And to your point, you're talking about immigrants here because they needed money. They wanted to put food on the table. So everybody worked in the family. Now, fast forward to today. I mean, we've got schools. We obviously push for colleges. We push for apprenticeship programs. So I don't know where this is going, but right now, to your knowledge, is the federal government addressing this? Are they looking at this to kind of like put the brakes on what's going on in a number of states here?
They say they are, but how are they addressing the unaccompanied migrant kids? Because if you look at the overall population of kids, there's less kids because the 130,000, they're kind of not counted in these statistics. But if you look at in the last 20 years, the kids age 16 to 19, back in 2001, 37% were not working because they were in school. Now that 37 is up to 58. So a lot of kids aren't working, but it's the kids that are working, and they're working because they need to work.
Yeah.
So so you definitely have seen a big increase of kids not in labor force. But I don't, you don't see any of the federal government, you don't see them with any big protection. The states say the state rules that have rolled back say they're trying to ease the labor shortage. But, it's at 15 years old in Iowa, should a kid be working on an assembly line? Or at 14 years old, working in meat coolers or industrial laundromats? I mean, that's some jobs that, when I was 14, I worked at a pizza place, and making a pizza is not the most dangerous thing in the world.
Yeah.
But so I'm for kids working, but it's got to be in a safe environment.
There you go. Well said. Rob Wilson, employment trends expert here on America's Workforce. We're going to stay on this issue, I promise, and thanks for joining us, okay?
Thanks for having me on.
All right, that'll be it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director of the Labor Federation, and the latest from the Maritime Trades Department. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.